beginning in November, KAOI in Maui, Hawaii. I'd also like to announce KXLY in Spokane, Washington. Wonderful to have you aboard. They began last night, I heard. Gunnersville, Alabama, WGSV may start tonight. So I would like to welcome those affiliates on board. There are many, many, many in the hopper, but we're not going to read about them until we actually have them signed, sealed, delivered, and on the air, as it were. Okay, we have two rules for this program. No bad language. And only one call per show, and that's not many rules, is it? Now, I want to again say, as I did last night, that if you don't go and see The Martian, you're crazy. I mean, if you like science, if you like space, if you like space and science, there's no way to go wrong. Every part of it was perfect. The acting, the actors and actresses, the story itself was superb to go along with the superb CGI. So The Martian, it's got to be the movie of the year. It better be, or I'll be upset. But, you know, I'm upset most years. Last year, I think it was Birdman, and I couldn't believe it. I went, oh, God, really? Who picked this? Not that the Birdman was an awful movie. It just wasn't, in my opinion, a good movie. Could have been a great movie, I guess, if you're a member of the Academy and you love that kind of stuff. But I didn't see Birdman at all. I wonder how many of the rest of you felt that way. All right, so we have not yet named the program, but we are going to do ghost stories for Halloween. And what we want you to do is, as we do every year, send them in. Now, we can either call this Ghost to Ghost, because I've done it for decades, or we can call it something new and cute. You're welcome to make suggestions. But if you have a good ghost story, and good ghost stories can be told succinctly, fairly rapidly, and effectively. So if you have a good ghost story, just write a little tiny synopsis of it and send it to me an email. And then be available on a decent phone at airtime. And if it's a good one, we'll call you. Or I may call. Actually, I'm the only one here. So it'll be me calling you. Anyway, here's how you do it. Little synopsis of your ghost story, please. Send it to Art Bell at KNYE. That's Kilowatt Nancy Yokohama Easy. Art Bell at KNYE.com. Little synopsis, and send it off. And then who knows, I may call you on Halloween Eve when we do whatever it is we decide to call it. But it will be creepy. Well, okay, let's look at the news. Yes, I saw the debates. I thought Bernie did not do as well as I thought he might have. I thought Hillary did as well as you would expect her to do. She's very practiced. And I don't have much more to say about it than that. I watched it. My interest in, I reminded myself why I'm not that interested in politics. The Russian military intervention to prop up Syria's government has brought new scrutiny of the CIA's secret support to Syrian rebels fighting Bashar al-Assad. But how far is the U.S. willing to go to empower its proxies to take on Vladimir Putin's allies? Answer seems to be not much, not very far. Countering their involvement over there is nowhere near as important, apparently, as battling the Islamic State. Nevertheless, our jets, you know, contrails are crossing up there, Russian and American jets, and oh God, it's dangerous. California will end its legislative season having enacted some of the country's most aggressive social policies. Now, these are laws requiring student vaccinations, granting terminally ill people the right to life-ending medications, and mandating equal pay for women. That's quite a lot. So California is going to take on end-of-life issues. Twitter is going to lay off 336 employees. So if you have a tweet to get out, you better hurry. Well, not really. It'll be fine. All of this signals CEO Jack Dorsey's resolve to slash costs. And, of course, who gets slashed when you need more income, more and better bottom line? It's the employees. The following from the internet, anomalous.com, this list contains most of the usual suspects, pardon the pun, but the sordid true histories behind the ghostly legends are an entertaining read. Every link within this article leads further down the rabbit hole of irresistible late-night reading, or talk radio in this case. As you dive into an extensive collection of firsthand paranormal experiences from police officers, that's right, these two sites will give you stories from police officers about the things we talk about. It will give you stories of ghosts. It will also link to the nurses. It's called allnurses.com. What's your best nursing ghost story? Well, you just know that nurses have lots and lots of ghost stories. Because, of course, they tend the ill and dying. And many times that is who is around when you die, is a nurse, right? Not necessarily a doctor. I guess you're coding, so they're on the way. But if you actually are passing, it's probably a nurse that gets to you first. I have heard so many tales of people who have felt a soul actually pass through them on the way to, well, its final destination. Sorry about the movie reference. All right, coming up here in a moment, this is, after all, October, so staying true to it, Dr. Barry E. Taff, who holds a doctorate in psychophysiology with a minor biomedical engineering, is a world-renowned parapsychologist who worked out of UCLA's former parapsychology lab from 1969 to 78 as a research associate. During his 40-year career, Dr. Taff has investigated more than 4,000 cases of ghosts, hauntings, poltergeists, alien abductions, and UFOs. He has conducted extensive studies in telepathy and precognition, which led to the development of the initial protocols for what was later termed remote viewing. Dr. Taff participates on the lecture circuit and has consulted for government, business, and law enforcement, including the CIA, really, Office of Naval Intelligence, ONI, National Security Agency, NSA, DIA, Defense Intelligence Agency, Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, DARPA, and the FBI, Interpol, APD, California Highway Patrol, and Santa Barbara Sheriff's Office. Wow! And the Westminster Police Department. Where hasn't he been? He has taught on numerous occasions at UCLA, UC Irvine, UC San Diego, and UC Santa Cruz. In the spring of 2010, Dr. Taff's book, Aliens Above, Ghosts Below, was published by Cosmic Pantheon Press and has since become an underground phenomenon. Coinciding with the launch of Dr. Taff's website, which is www.barrytaff, that's BARRYTAFF.net. So in a moment, Dr. Taff, and we will talk about, well, aliens above and ghosts below and all of that. I played it for the man who's worked for more agencies than anybody I know. I had to just read them all. Dr. Barry Taff, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be back on with you after all this time.
After all this time, about a decade at least, right?
Yes.
Long time.
Good to hear your voice again.
Good to hear yours, too. How does, by the way, what is it like, before we get started, working for so many of the NSAs of the world, the DIAs, all these, DARPA, I mean, just everything we talk about here, usually involving some sort of conspiracy, you've been there.
Yeah, well, basically, it's like never tell anybody what you're doing. You sign national security oaths, and you can't really discuss in any detailed manner what you're doing because you would violate your oath, and you would put yourself in jeopardy. And even back when the labs opened during this, you know, in the 70s, we were doing a lot of the work there. I was interviewed by the Daily Bruin more and more than one occasion, and one time I was a little too open about what we were doing and got some rather nasty phone calls from some of these groups. And there was enough misinformation in the article. There was errors in what they said, where they did print a retraction. And some of these groups said, hey, if you don't correct this, there's going to be a problem in your future. Mm-hmm. Like, you'll never get a job. You'll never be able to get a home. You're not going to get credit. I go, what? And I said, look, why did you say this? I said, because I didn't think it was a problem. It is a problem.
Mm.
So there was enough errors. Everything went away. And that it was written up in a Daily Bruin article, you know, 40 years ago or somewhere around that time.
All right, so you didn't get a call like, you know, how's the family, doctor? Cute little girl you have there, or something awful like that.
No, but I did get a visit from members of two different groups on a weekend morning at about 11 a.m. in the late 70s, and they were complaining about someone, I can't use the name, of a powerful family who was trying to investigate me through these agencies. And I learned who it was. I went, what? This is the aunt of a girl I'm dating. And they go, how old's the girl? Well, she's my age. It was like 29 or 30 at the time.
Right.
And I said, is there a problem with her legally? I go, no. Does she have children? No. And I didn't know what the problem was. And then I found out through them that the aunt of this woman, whoever, was linked to one of the most powerful families in the country in terms of corporate America. I didn't know this.
I see.
And she was having me follow it and trying to find out more about me. And the one thing the intelligence agencies do not like is when other people try to get information out of them about people that work with them.
Right.
And so, you know, I went, oh, my God, this is ridiculous. So, you know, we all got a laugh out of it. We all went out to lunch, and they said, this is about a girl? Yeah, I go, what kind of people do you date? I go, apparently people I don't know very well.
I guess so.
That's the end of that. It's dealing with these people is very odd because they're not like normal people. The whole mentality is different. They're more paranoid. They're more reclusive. They're more a little more angry, a little more bitter. A lot of them see what I run. They don't like their jobs because it turns them into sort of machines that are there to do one thing only, and that's it. But it's been a long time since I've dealt with them, and I don't miss them.
I totally get that, the machine part. I don't know how people can do jobs like that, honest to God, whether it's just sitting in a factory and, you know, stamping the same thing again and again and again or whatever it is. I just really can't imagine it. All right. So you've been in this field a long, long time now, and I do wonder how a person clinically sets about to study the paranormal.
Well, the first thing you should understand is the way parapsychology, which is the science that investigates the paranormal, views this area. If you said to me, can you tell me what parapsychology is? The best answer available in my mind is it's the scientific study of the exchange of energy and information between people and the environment in ways that preclude the five known sensory systems. Bottom line, we're antennas. We receive and send information remotely. And this is through time and through space. The mechanisms are somewhat understood, but not totally. And they imply different reality than what we've been taught in school when we took physics or chemistry or biology. There's a lot more going on than we ever believed. If I were to go back to my young self 46 years ago or earlier and tell my young self what we know now, my young self will look at me and go, you're out of your mind. You're crazy. What are you talking about? This stuff No. If everything we expected to learn, we did not learn. What we never thought of hit us in the face. And in science, there's two ways you conduct research. One is in a lab with controlled experiments to replicate your data.
Right.
And, you know, you build models and theories and all that, and you prove or disprove a hypothesis. The only other way is, if you can't lure the phenomenon into a lab and do research, you must go out in the field and collect data for a very long period of time, hoping to see longitudinal patterns in such data. And I've been fortunate enough to do both, more of the latter than the prior. And the patterns that have appeared have been extraordinary. Things that, like, are just mind-boggling because they run contrary to what we think about ourselves. And in the end, they may tell us more about ourselves than we ever imagined.
All right. Let me tell you what I've observed decades of doing talk radio about this subject. A lot of it is BS, frankly. And a lot of it is just simply not true. It may be entertaining, but it's not true. But, and that's a big but, Doctor, there is a very great deal of it that I have found to be absolutely, unquestionably true, and that would go particularly for that which I've personally experienced. And, you know, of course, everybody would say that. If I felt it, if I experienced it, then it's true. But there are some things I know are true, and that's why I continue to pound away in this area, because we are more than just our physical selves, more than our physical belongings, more than physical everything. There's something that's true about that.
Right. I agree with 100% of what you said, but even more so than you described. Once you get past the 98 or 99.9 chunk of garbage that's being discussed to the public, tone of the public,
right.
Once you get past that, what's left is extraordinary beyond words.
Oh, yes.
And like I said, most of the stuff we see on reality shows, we can ignore. It's entertainment, and it was never meant to be anything more than that. I was asked, when the whole genre began, the reality show genre, I was contacted by one of the first creators of one of the early shows to be on a show. So I didn't know him. I met with him in his office in West Los Angeles. And he told me what he wanted to do. And I said, but you realize that 99.99999% of the time, nothing's going to happen when you go out and investigate things.
Right.
It's like expecting to be hit with a meteorite every time you go out into the field.
Mm-hmm.
But what are you going to do? We're going to do some reverse logic. I go, uh-oh, what do you mean?
We're going to shake the camera.
We're going to fake stuff and make people think it's real. And then when something does happen, we'll make it look like a hoax. I said, well, it's nice seeing you, and I walked out.
There you have it. I mean, look, I interview people here. Some of them make astounding claims. Some of them are very entertaining. I let them make astounding claims. I can't disprove what they're saying. But on the other hand, I do sit here and doubt it. There are others who make claims that I understand very well may be true. And some of it, as I mentioned, I've experienced myself. And I'll have a big fight with anybody who says that's not true.
Right. What drew me into this field was not simple scientific curiosity. That was sufficient. But what drew me in was growing up, I had all these extraordinary paranormal encounters, experiences, not with ghosts, telepathy, precognition, out-of-body experiences. Why me? Why not my family and friends? Why? What? You know, so I had to make a choice. Either I'm nuts, everyone else is nuts, or something extraordinary is going on. And I pick the latter of all three of them. Because these things kept happening. And on my website, I have a blog called A Different Kind of Psychic, Being a Medical Intuitive. And this is sort of where it all began for me. I've told this story many times that it bears repeating because I remember it like it was yesterday. I was 10 years old in the fifth grade and playing in the courtyard one sunny day. And this little blonde girl named Christine is walking towards me. And beautiful little blonde girl, blue eyes, a sky blue dress with a flower on the top, and I'm looking at her, and suddenly it just clicked on. What I mean by clicked on is suddenly I could see that there was a tube coming out of her right side, and there was a plastic bag under her dress, and I kept rubbing my eyes. What's this? So I went up to her. I said, Christine, what's this tube? And she started screaming and yelling, so they dragged me in the teacher's office and then the principal's office. It turned out she had a colostomy.
Uh-huh.
You know, a colostomy. I was 10 years old. So I told the principal of the school, look, this is, he said, look, did you sleep in the girl's bathroom or did you look under her dress? I said, I did neither. It just came on. He goes, it's like x-ray vision. He goes, all right. So he calls my mom, and my mom talks to him. He says, yeah, she goes, yeah, Barry can do this. And the doctor and the principal went, what?
So obviously this had begun much earlier, if your mom knew about it.
Yeah, a couple of years earlier. And I did it to them and family members.
Oh.
And they just didn't want to talk about it, but it happened in school. And then, so the conversation between my mother and the principal ends, and the principal looks at me, look, I don't know who you are or what you're doing, but if we hear of this again, you're going to be expelled, and how they'll have you arrested. So then I looked at him. I said, well, you know, sir, I said, you've got a weird scar. Well, you must have had an appendicitis or something. It's always purple. Now I call it a keloid. I didn't know that word then.
And in other words, you were sick of school. You were ready to get expelled.
No, I didn't know. I just told him about he meant doing it to other students.
Oh, I see. Yeah, but he had just threatened you with expulsion for doing it.
Yeah.
And so you're telling him about his own scar. Okay.
Yeah, and then he turned purple on me.
Yeah, I bet.
And he just said, all right, Barry, get out. And remember, if I hear one other instance, you're toast. You're out of here.
Mm.
So there was no other instance at that school. But that's what I started growing up with. And I go, why me? Why not? You know, why are these? So just jump forward to July 4th, 2013. Yeah.
Okay.
One of my friends is a colleague, is a medical doctor. We've known each other. We met in the lab in 1972. We own a number of medical patented medical devices. We've written scripts together. Anyway, so he brought over his new girlfriend, who I didn't even know, and her children, who I didn't know existed. He wanted me to diagnose the children and her. Okay, so, you know, we'd be in L.A. They come over. It was warm, but not hot, and they come upstairs. Beautiful woman. Early 40s, and I looked at her kids. I looked at the boy. He was probably 12. Cute kid. And I looked at him. I saw the strangest thing I've ever seen in my life. Even for me, it froze me. The best way to describe it, what I saw was that his frontal lobes were missing.
Holy mackerel.
And I kept rubbing my eyes. What am I?
May I ask a quick question? Are you only able to see people with some sort of defect, doctor, or, you know, as in frontal lobes missing, or are you able to look inside anybody's head?
Latter, anyone.
Anyone.
It's as easy to do as typing to me. But let me finish this story.
You're like a human MRI, but go ahead.
So I looked at him and I kept rubbing my eyes and he tugged me to the side. He had cortical encephalopathy, which is the disease that eats away part of the brain.
Oof.
And he didn't tell me this, and obviously his mother didn't tell that child's mother didn't tell me. And then I swung my vision over. I looked at the boy's mother, and I said, boy, you must have smoked a lot. Your lungs look like brown paper bags, black spots. I mean, you have COPD, right? And she turned purple, and her eyes got real large, and she picked up and dragged her kids out of my place like someone shot her in the butt with a BB gun. So that was fun, but I mean, it's easy to do. I mean,
no, it's not.
The problem is I can't stop it from happening.
It may be easy for you. It's not easy for me. I have never looked inside anybody.
Right. Remember the movie Man of Steel in 2013 came out?
I do.
Remember the scene where young Clark Kent is in the classroom and suddenly he's looking through people?
Yes.
And he freaks out, runs and hides in the closet?
Yes.
With the exception of the latter part of that scene, that's what I lived through. I go, what's going on? Why am I seeing this? And even if I, another example, when The Dark Knight came out, I went to see the screening. I met a friend there I knew from the UCLA days. So we drove separately, and we sit down. The movie starts, and suddenly my bladder feels like it's about to explode. It's burning and cramping. I'm going, oh, my God, it's happening.
All right, we're going to have to go to break.
Oh, okay.
And when we come back, we'll pick up with your bladder exploding.
Dark Matter Network News. I'm Amy Martin. The Dutch Safety Board has issued their final report on the downed Malaysian Airlines flight MH17, claiming that it was struck down by a Russian surface-to-air missile. The passenger jet crashed near the Ukraine-Russian border last July, killing all 298 passengers flying to Kuala Lumpur from Amsterdam. U.S. and German intelligence claimed at the time that the plane was shot down by pro-Russian insurgents during the height of the territorial conflict. The investigation that involved reconstructing the nose of the plane concluded that the impact occurred on the left side of the cockpit. Fragments of missile debris have been identified as the Russian-made 9M38. Russia claims that these weapons are no longer used by their military and insists that they must have been obtained by Ukraine forces. Archaeologists at Stonehenge may have discovered the eating habits of the monument's Neolithic builders. According to researchers at the University of Sheffield, barbecue-style feasts, including roast pork and beef, seem to have occurred with dairy products such as milk and yogurts, which were only found in use in ceremonial areas. One researcher notes, "The special placing of milk pots at the larger ceremonial buildings reveals that certain products had a ritual significance beyond that of nutrition alone. The sharing of food had religious as well as social connotations for promoting unity among Britain's scattered farming communities in prehistory. The evidence was gathered from remnants of cooked meals in clay pots as well as animal bones found scattered throughout the site." The blog GadgetZZ.com just received a mysterious DVD containing what appears to be a person in a 17th century plague doctor's mask and black robes. The figure looks to be communicating a strange encrypted message. The disc, which features a series of letters, numbers, and symbols written on the outside, contains the mysterious figure with an odd blinking light in the middle of its hand. The video also appears to have numerous deliberate glitches, and it is thought that the figure may be communicating to the recipient through some sort of encrypted Morse code. The DVD menu also features an image of human bones. The blog claims that the disc arrived from Poland and is reaching out to readers far and wide to help disseminate the code. Check it out for yourself on GadgetZZ.com. Harvard is looking to cure type 1 diabetes with the help of stem cell research. The university has utilized embryonic stem cells to make human insulin-producing beta cells for supplementing those which no longer function in individuals with type 1 diabetes. Diabetes affects an estimated 9% of adults around the world, with over 1.2 million deaths from the disease annually. According to Harvard, these researchers are now just one preclinical step away from the finish line. This has been Amy Martin for Dark Matter Network News.
Anyway, Dr. Barry Taff is my guest, and he was, when we left him, in some medical distress with regard to his, and it was in a story, though, not in current life, or he'd be fine after that seven-minute break. So, anyway, pick up, doctor.
Yeah, so the movie starts running, and suddenly, as I said, I start feeling a chronic cramping, burning, spasming in my bladder. I go, what's this? I don't have problems with my bladder. The woman I was with suddenly got a silent call from her daughter, which is the phone was on vibrate. She had to leave, so she didn't need my help. It was, you know, no big deal, but she had to leave. So I stayed and watched the movie. Within about 10 minutes after she left, I felt fine. She called the next day to ask how the film was, and after I asked her how her daughter was, she revealed to me that I told her what had happened to me with the bladder, and she said, that's really odd. I had a really bad bladder infection that night.
Huh.
So sometimes I see it, sometimes I feel it, sometimes both. But it could be it's an impediment, an encumbrance in terms of getting close to some people, because most as we get old, stuff happens.
Yeah, can you see these things at will still?
Yes, it's like I said, it's no difference to me looking at a computer screen or driving. And if someone, like if I'm ever near people who are epileptic, I'll start feeling dizzy or I'll pass out.
You know, you spent many, many years in these three-letter agencies. If you had told them what you just told me, you would have been out on your ear.
Correct. And therefore, I never discussed it.
Good move.
I met these groups, these individuals from these intelligence agencies was... They came and they witnessed, and this is discussed in another blog on my website called A Learned Psi, Training to Be Psychic. It's about the remote viewing work we did, and it talks about how these people, number them not by name, came to our lab and witnessed these experiments we were doing, and they were just blown away. And, you know, some of us could do it better than others, some couldn't, but they had never seen it work that well under controlled conditions. And they wanted to work with us later on, but UCLA went, no, be political suicide. Mm. And it would have been even back in those halcyon years, it would have been looked upon as political suicide.
Okay, let's switch gears very quickly if we can. I get messages on my computer. I call it the wormhole as we go along. Joe writes, Art, can you have him go into detail on the entity case. I heard the interview you did with him back in the 90s, and boy, was that a spooky case. Do you remember which one that was, Doctor?
Well, of course. It began August 22nd, 1974, Culver City, California. It began when my old colleague at the time, was in a bookstore in Westwood, Hunter's Books, and he's talking about our work with a friend. And a woman and her friend on the next aisle overheard him, and she said, "Oh, by the way, my house is haunted." So my colleague went, "Okay, give me your name and number. We'll call you and set up an appointment."
Mm-hmm.
So we did, went out to her house maybe a week or so later. It was a hot August night, and Neil Diamond wasn't there.
There you go.
And very muggy in the house, little shack on Braddock Drive in Culver City. And the first thing, Doris Beither, B-I-T-H-E-R, the very first thing she told us right off the bat, that she'd been repeatedly raped by a ghost. And we went, "What? Huh?" We rolled our eyes back, and we thought, this woman is, you know, emotionally disturbed. She needs help. She needs psychiatric intervention, medication, therapy, but she doesn't need parapsychologists.
Right.
So we took her notes. We took notes down, but we looked. They said, "Really, there's nothing we can do for your situation." She went, "What?" I said, "You know, we suspect what you need is something far different than us." And that was it. And then a week later, I wrote a big P on the top of the form, fill out in every case. That, to me, was in the psychotic. There's no reason to waste any more time with them. But she called back about a week to 10 days later, and some friends and neighbors had witnessed things. Well, this changed the whole thing, because if there's corroborative testimony and multiple witnesses, you suddenly take some interest. So we go back to a little house on Braddock Drive. We're standing in the kitchen talking, and the lower cupboard door comes open, and a iron skillet jumps out, or frying pan jumps out, and takes a leap of a few feet away from the cupboard. And we check for if there were animals in there, or wires, or springs, or who knows what. There was nothing. And there began the onslaught. And it the bedroom suddenly was ice cold. It felt like it was refrigerated, yet it was a very warm summer. And yet we couldn't detect the source of the cold. And we couldn't always record it, which is even stranger.
So what I was going to ask, could you measure it?
Not all the time. We also, the temperature drop was also correlated with a disgusting odor of decomposing organic matter, like a body rotting.
Right.
And, you know, we smelled it, we didn't, we smelled it, we didn't. We brought in a Hewlett-Packard sniffer, and it couldn't pick up anything. And then we began seeing these strange pops of light. And we, what's this? And so we saw them. We then tried to control Doris's environment. We put up poster boards over her walls and ceiling and over the windows. This was happening primarily in her main bedroom.
Can I ask you, when you say pops of, I actually have a couple of questions. When you say pops of light, what do you mean?
Like a light popped on real quickly, and it popped on, and popped off, popped on. But the lights began to move. I called them corpuscular masses, because they looked like gelatinous in nature. And they were clearly three-dimensional, very dynamic, and flying around the room. And they were always lime green in color. Do not ask me why, because I have no idea.
Okay, but what I will ask is, take you back, one other question, then you can go on, and that is, you said you encountered witnesses to corroborate this woman's story before you really got into it. What did they see, and how many witnesses?
One, two, three. There were three witnesses, all women.
Okay.
All a little older than Doris.
Right.
And seemingly a little more grounded. She was very cryptic in her answers to her questions and somewhat evasive. Today, if people are that evasive and cryptic, we walk away. We just leave because we know we're wasting our time. So the witnesses, independently of each other, described these strange lights that would come, show up, and move around her house.
Okay.
And they'd hear noises, and they'd smell things, and, you know, see things out of the corner of their eye, and it began to disturb them. Now, Doris had four children, each by a different man, three boys and a girl. We never met her girl, who was very young. She kept her out of the house while we were there, which is a very good decision. So we met her boys, and typical, you know, from young teenager to an older teenager, and all they wanted to do was watch TV and play music.
Mm-hmm.
So we began observing things, which was consistent with what the other witnesses had described, and we got a photograph. The problem was, we saw a ball of light. This is on my website. several different blogs. One's called The Paradoxical Entity Photographs, and also The Real Entity Case. You'll see both the images on both. It looks like a comet with a tail on it. And we don't know what this was. We shot it at very high. We used Tri-X film, pushed in development, and we got the strange light. But we never saw something like that. Then at one point, lights started swimming. They were flying around Doris in her little bedroom. And we did get some pictures of those, but they weren't lights. They were arcs of light. And this is also depicted on my website and in my book, Chapter 2.
Doctor, how frequently was this woman being sexually assaulted by this entity?
Those began and ended long before we knew her.
Okay.
So we couldn't prove or disprove that she'd been raped because too much time had passed.
Right.
But, you know, her story took on more credibility by the fact that we began having experiences there that we could somewhat document, you know, with cameras.
Mm-hmm.
But what we got in these two frames were extraordinary because Doris is sitting on her little bed in the bedroom, and there's an arc of light that frames her, goes from down, the bed goes up over her and back down. And what makes this particular shot so intriguing, Art, is that the walls behind the arc of light meet at a 90-degree angle.
Mm-hmm.
So if this was the projected light source, the light would be bent in accordance with the wall. Yet it is not, which tells us the light was in free space.
Really, yes, really rounder.
So that is pretty amazing. And then another point, you know, in that one of the many times we were there, these lights coalesced in the corner of the bedroom, and they formed an apparition of a very large man from about the waist up. You could see the head, the brow ridge, the jaw, the orbits, outer orbits of the eyes. You could see the upper torso, the musculature, the, you know, pectorals, the biceps, the whole bit. And then it cut off at the waist, and it was that same sickening lime green. And this image wasn't a static one. It was articulating, meaning it was moving.
Oh, boy.
And then it popped like a light bulb, like someone turned a light bulb off, and it was gone. So I told everyone, don't say a word. When you stop shaking, sit down, and here's the pens or pencils, write down what you saw.
Good idea.
And we all saw the same thing with almost no variation. So we were shooting dozens of photographs of it. The apparition, whatever it appeared to be. And they didn't show anything. There was no glowing apparition of a large male standing there. There was nothing. But wait a minute. We all saw the same thing. How did we see them all if there was nothing emitting light that we could observe? A little bit of a problem. You know, Michael Persinger's work, well, we know for a fact that very low-level electromagnetic fields could induce very intense audiovisual hallucinations in people. And it's an established fact. If that were the case in this instance, with up to 25 people in that little bedroom, you'd expect a great deal of variation from one to the next.
You bet.
There's no such thing as a shared or hysterical hallucination. There's mass hysteria, but not mass hallucinations. And unless you're subjected to a hallucinogen, and even then it isn't the same. So if we all saw the same thing, what was causing that image to appear to our eyes? Or did it appear to our eyes? Or maybe we saw it in our mind?
Well, if something is literally injected into your brain so that your optic nerves register it, it's not necessarily going to be recorded on a camera.
Correct. If something is affecting your brain directly,
right?
Let's say the occipital lobe or the frontal lobe,
yes,
or parietal or whatever, and that affects your brain to have some sort of, you know, visual hallucination. You can't record that with any instrument I'm aware of under it that we know of, although the Russians decades ago were claiming they could record things like that. It never proved out. The question is, what did we see? Well, the case evolved and evolved. The phenomena grew weaker over time. But at one point, we're in the bedroom. It was ice cold, and we were saying, basically holding a little seance. This was nothing else to do. And we put on music that the children, her boy said, when they put it on, whatever, at certain points of certain songs, the phenomena would increase. So we started doing that, and we saw that it did indeed increase. But was that due to our intense dislike of the music?
Right.
Or was that due to the fact that there was some, you know, correlation with the audio, you know, the acoustic waves coming off the record players and the phenomenon? We'll never know. But At one point, the black poster board started tearing off the wall. Now, each black poster board had a number and a magnetic orientation. So if we got more photographs, we could tell where they were coming from and going to. We had a reference grid. And suddenly something, you know, after we're pleading, do something, suddenly the duct tape was being pulled off right in front of us.
Oh,
and it flew off the ceiling and hit Doris in the head.
Wow.
Which is pretty good, given that there are 25 people in the room.
All right, so this sounds like poltergeist activity.
Exactly. And contrary to what the book made you to believe, now Frank DiFilippo did a great job of turning the case into a novel, and the interpretation of the novel and the script in the book was that it was a ghost. However, the evidence does not support that hypothesis, in my opinion. It supports the hypothesis. This was the poltergeist case. This is discussed in Chapter 2 of my book in depth. Now, when Doris moved, finally, from Culver City to Carson, it followed her. We had some experiences there, but at a lower level of activity, discussed in my book and on my website. She moved again to Texas. It followed her there. And by the time we saw her again in 83, when the movie The Entity came out, she claimed that it all but ceased. However, a good friend of mine named Javier Ortega from GhostTheory.com, he's been able to speak to her three male children. And they claim that phenomena began before she lived on Braddock Drive in Culver City and continued long after they moved. But the problem is the one who did the most speaking of it kept contradicting himself during the interview, which is not a good indication of either memory or honesty. And, you know, now Doris Beithner passed away in 1999 at the age of 58. And the cause of death was cardiopulmonary arrest, but they don't know why her heart and lungs stopped. They just decided to.
Yes, so many deaths are unexplained.
Yes.
A lot of people don't know that, but many deaths go virtually unexplained. Was there any indication, Doctor, of what began the attachment of this poltergeist to her?
Well, according to what her kid said, when they were living in Santa Monica before they moved to Braddock Drive, little things began happening, banging noises, things that appear and disappear. They'd see lights, but it was a very low level. They move into the Braddock Drive house sometime later, and it's a little shack. It was condemned several times by the city. I'm surprised anyone could live in it. So she moved in. A few days later, an elderly Hispanic woman comes up to the door, knocks on it. Doris goes to the door. What do you want? And she says, this house is evil. You must leave it. It used to be a farmhouse. You can't stay here. And Doris went, are you out of your mind? What are you talking about? The lady left, and Doris forgot about it. And then sometime, not a short time later, things started, started to peak in Doris's new home. Now, as I said, most of my case file, I'd say 98% of my cases are linked to people, which seems to be the norm. However, it's more complicated than that, because we've now learned that this phenomena is the result of some people's neurophysiology interacting in a very extraordinary way with the electromagnetic environment or geomagnetic environment they happen to live in. And if they have the right type of neurophysiological problem, this may end up producing what we call poltergeist activity. And this is outlined in my book Ad Nauseam. But bottom line, as, you know, poltergeist activity is referred to as recurrent spontaneous psychokinesis, meaning it's not controllable. It can be a macroscopic level where heavy, massive objects can move, including people. And this case supports that.
Doctor, is it your view, in looking back on this case now, that she was the center of the activity, voluntarily or involuntarily, more likely, she was producing this poltergeist activity herself?
Yes. Yes. And my book discusses this in depth in Chapter 2, that there were libidinal fantasies that were somehow being externalized, and they were triggering the onset of these phenomena. Doris had a really very dysfunctional relationship with her family growing up with different men, and it's sort of like there was an episode of Star Trek, I forgot the name of it, with Michael Dunn. They were on a planet where all the elders had psychokinetic abilities. And at one point, one of the actors becomes sick, one of the peepers, and Spock said, we're seeing this telekinetic or psychokinetic manifestation of Parlam's delirium. And that's sort of what we think was going on in Doris's case. And this makes it all the more interesting, because if something can affect us, the environment, and we couple with it in a very unusual way, we can release energy that can tear the environment apart like that? At one point, the fuse box was torn out of the wall, thrown at Doris. Candelabra was thrown at her. It's more amazing that it was coming from her than if it was a ghost.
And oh, that's astounding. I mean, just to sit and observe these things happening, to see them happening, I say on the one hand, I would love to be able to observe and see it myself, but it would scare the you-know-what out of me. So I don't know if I really want to see it.
If you live to be 1,000, you have higher probability of being hit with a meteorite in 10 minutes than you do of this phenomena harming you. It's just your own fear is usually the biggest problem anyone has. Our own fear is because we're startled. We don't know what it is. It didn't threaten us, but it certainly did terrible things to Doris, at least, you know, and, you know, by what we did experience there and record over time in her initial home and then in another home. And then she moved from Carson to San Bernardino, Riverside, and then to Texas, and just continued to happen.
All right. Hold tight, Doctor. We'll be right back to you. This is the shorter break. Dr. Taff, the ability of a poltergeist, or in this case, the lady we talked about, to move physical objects, you know, that requires energy. And again, circling back, you think that she was able to somehow manipulate the electromagnetic field in some way that we don't truly understand?
Well, it's yes, but it's more than that. We know for a fact that what paranormal phenomena in general, whether it's ESP or remote viewing all the way to poltergeist activity, beyond, the energies involved that create the events are not electromagnetic, gravitational, or nuclear, at least not as we know them. However, we know that electromagnetic forces can mediate their response because it's coupling with us. This is on my website in my book. There's a number of parameters or variables that are at work here in poltergeist cases, living human agents, we call poltergeist agents. One is location. It's the environment is unique in some electromagnetic or geomagnetic way, which acts as a stimulus or an irritant to the certain people's nervous system. Then you have a person who suffers either from epilepsy in general or temporal lobe epilepsy,
yes, sir,
which can make them hypersensitive to electromagnetic or geomagnetic fields. Then, if the field, if the energy of the local physical environment, if the frequency of the electromagnetic energy or geomagnetic field is the same as their nervous systems, it will induce inductive resonance coupling, which means that their nervous system gets linked to this environment, mm-hmm, and then their unconscious or subconscious can mediate the release of this force to wreak havoc on it and produce anything from object movement and disappearance and reappearance.
All right. So how about this? If a great deal of energy is used, if you've got the right equipment, you should be able to measure that energy in use, in progress. In other words, there should be a way. It's going to take a tremendous amount of energy to actually move a physical object, and right, that should be able to be measured, right, if you've got the right equipment.
Well, yes and no. We can measure the way the environment, like high amplitude geomagnetic field or electromagnetic field, we can, right, measure those. However, right, long before a 210-pound man can be picked up and thrown across the room, and I've seen that happen in the San Pedro case, long before that can happen based on the energies we know of, and there's only four types of energies we know, your clothing and everything in the room would be set on fire by the liberated heat, the second law of thermodynamics. Not only does it not get hot when these things occur, it often gets colder. It appears to get cold, but that, right, could be the effect of the magnetic field on your body. You think it's cold when it isn't. Huh. So this is the whole problem. You see, let's say a 200-pound man is picked up and thrown on the wall like a rag doll. Well, his clothing and everything in the room should start burning immediately, but it doesn't. So we're learning something here, extraordinary. The energies we know of, with perhaps the exception of gravity, when they do work in the classical sense, which is what's involved when a person or heavy massive object is moved, they produce heat. That's the way the universe we know of works. This force does not produce heat, which is contrary to everything we know.
Yes.
So basically, we can bury our head in the sand and go, I don't want to know this. Don't bother me. It's too complicated. Or we can take the next step and figure out if it isn't anything we do know, then what can we develop technology to measure what's going on? Well, we can only measure what we know. Every instrument, you know, I've got low-frequency spectrum analyzers and air ion counters and you know, geomagnetometer, all these different things, thermal imaging stuff, and they can only, they're designed to measure what we know. You can't develop a machine to measure what we don't know because we don't know what it is.
A good point.
And that's the problem with all of this. We can, you know, the one thing that's interesting, faces and places may change after 46 years of research in the field. But the phenomena does not. We keep seeing the same things over and over again. Wherever we go, we keep running into the same situation. It gets down. We can measure the environment. Okay, it's through this and this. We can measure the people. The instruments we have can measure bioelectric fields. They're pretty easy to measure. Biomagnetic fields are very difficult because they're extremely weak. You need superconducting sensors, which are not portable. They're not made to be moved around. However, among poltergeist agents, we can measure their body's magnetic field because it's pumping out so much more energy that we do know of as compared to a normal person. And they usually, these people that have these problems, these psychokinetic manifestations on a recurring basis, beside having, you know, temporal lobe epilepsy and the environment's very strong to irritate the nervous system, they have a very low threshold for dealing with stress. And all this combines to produce these results. And it's amazing. I mean, it'd be like going on a date with girls and every girl looks the same. What? But how can they all look the same? But they take off a mask. We're all different people. We just happen to look alike. And that's what we keep running into. And so most of them are women, although some are men. Some can be young, you know, adolescent, pubescent adolescents. Some can be mature adults. But the things they have in common stay the same. And a lot of times we ask people questions on all investigations. And we tell them, look, some of the questions are very probing and invasive. If you don't want to answer them, don't. We ask about medications they've been taking, how long, what dosage, what were you, why were they prescribed, family history of epilepsy. And sometimes it's so subtle, they go, no, no, no. And then we ask about sleep disorders, and they say, oh, yeah, well, I take something like Klonopin. Klonopin is anti-seizure, anti-convulsant. And they say, you know what's odd? When I take the medication, the phenomena stops, but I sleep well.
I was going to ask if there's any indication that the that any pharmaceuticals either increase or decrease that ability, and you just sort of answered that.
Yes, it depends on the individual, but generally speaking, in fact, long ago when I did your shows, people started calling me, people I didn't know all over the country, and it was great because they didn't know anything about what I was doing in detail, and they're telling me, oh, they're taking their, you know, medicine for epilepsy, and when they were taking it, the phenomena stopped, and they stopped taking medication because they didn't like the way it made them feel. The seizure would return, as would the phenomena. So,
wow.
Again, you know, now, if someone is willing to take the time and spend the money, you could do functional MRI studies or PET studies, positron emission tomography. And we probably could find exactly what part of the brain is mediating these abilities, these recurrent spontaneous psychokinetic events. And I've got this gut feeling in me that says this energy might allow us to go to the stars. This could give us technology we can't even begin to imagine, like propulsion.
You mean locked in our own brains?
Yep. It was no coincidence. The second pilot for the Star Trek TV series original dealt with people who were very gifted psychics.
Mm-hmm.
And it happened to deal with interstellar travel. So, you know, it's the more we learn, every time we answer a question, it generates 20 more. We answer another one, 20 more. We answer another one, 50 more.
All right. Let me go down a couple of roads here,
sure.
If I can. One of the ones that I've had personal experience with is precognition. And don't worry, folks, I'm not going to explain the experience I had again. I'm tired of talking about it, but I had an unquestionable case of precognition, doctor. So I know it's real. I absolutely know it's real. However, it is a function of a living human brain, as apparently poltergeist activity is, right?
all of this seems to be linked with us living beings at some point. And in my book and on my website, I tell a great story. We were doing all this remote viewing work at UCLA, and it was fun, but it got boring because it was easy to do and it was easy to reproduce the results for the most part. So we tried something unique. Instead of doing real-time remote viewing, how about doing some precognitive remote viewing? Let's look ahead in time 1 week and see who the randomly chosen target would be for the next session 1 week later. We didn't know who they'd, no one knew. It was all random people coming in, randomly chosen. So we put ourselves through our progressive muscular relaxation. The lights are off. We're recording everyone's voices. Describe the target of the next week. A lot of us started describing a tall, beautiful blonde with blue eyes. Describe her clothing, pantsuit, gorgeous.
Yes.
And each chair was numbered beneath it. And she described the chair she sat in by number. And then we described a big house in Hollywood Hills, three stories, and a big baby grand piano. That could have been anything. Then we start describing a tall man. Over 6 feet, handsome, strong, dressed in all black. Black shirt, black pants, black boots, black gloves, black cape, black hat, black sword, black mask. We thought, are we losing our minds?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the next week, new people come in. We never met. They were brought in by third parties that had not been in our group for weeks. Each person was given a little envelope with a piece of paper in it with a number. People sit down. We roll dice. Okay, open your packets. Whoever's number matches the number on the dice, let us know. This woman says, oh, it's me. And we had forgotten what we said a week earlier. I mean, who remembers stuff from a week ago when it's not about your exact life? We told the woman, here's the control for the tape recorder. Start playing it back. If you hear anything that correlates to you, stop it and comment. If it doesn't, don't. So she hears the recording. We described her perfectly. Height, face, hair, figure, and clothing. Could have been coincidence. We described the house she lived in. Could have been coincidence. Growing up, the piano, could have been coincidence. But then we get to the tall man all in black, and she just has hesitation on her part. And we didn't even know her name. She turns to us, and she goes, do you know who I am? And we said, no. She said, I'm Tony Williams. And we went, and? She said, do you know who? No. My father is Guy Williams, who played Zorro for Disney.
Right.
And she went, wait a minute. When did you make this tape? We said, a week ago. A week ago? I didn't know it was coming here until 3 hours ago. And then she was randomly chosen on top of it? Wait a minute. I don't get it. Neither do we. You can't see a future that's not there. You're perceiving information. What's the source? It's not random probability. Come on. You never have these occurrences, ever. And this is where it gets more interesting. There's an idea called implicate order. And it implies, and this is some research done at Caltech by a well-known researcher who was relieved of his duties because of what he discovered. He spent more than two decades, and he proved the fact to the best of medical science that our long-term memories are very likely not stored in our own brain. What?
What?
They're stored in remote power field, like a zero-point field, and the way we access them is remotely.
Why don't we just call it the cloud?
Yeah, exactly. But, so if this is the way we're designed to function on a regular basis, on a daily basis for our entire life, then what we think is paranormal isn't. This is normal. We just don't know any better. So that means that the information, very likely, of the future already exists. Not the events, the information.
About it.
The information about the past still exists, like a giant hologram. Everything is everywhere, equally distributed. Then why can some of us see these things while others cannot? Why can some of us race cars while others cannot? Why can some of us write well or do art well or be an athlete? Everyone's got different proclivities, but precognition poses the biggest threat to our reality because it suggests that we're ignorant. There's a lot about going on we don't know.
Well, all right. Here's the thing about my precognitive experience. Number one, it was without question precognitive. I couldn't stop it. It kept coming until I finally paid attention to it. Number two, I have never been able to reproduce it. I did nothing to bring it on. I couldn't stop it from coming on, and I've never been able to repeat it. Now, what do you make out of that?
Well, I don't, you know, no offense, I don't remember what it was. I'm sure I've heard you talk of it, but it's been a long time. But what I'm asking you, did it involve a strong, emotionally dramatic event?
Not particularly. Well, it depends. All right. Okay. I'll try and make it real quick. Here it is. I lived in Santa Barbara, California. It was a garden apartment. Nothing special about this. I had my own car. I parked it on the street outside the apartment. You could actually open the sliding glass door to the apartment and look out and see the car. Or even just, you know, open the curtains and look out and see the car through the window. So I came home from work one night, sat down, watched the evening news, which I did every night at that time. As the news continued, all of a sudden, here it comes, like ocean waves washing over me, the feeling that somebody's going to hit your car. Somebody is going to hit your car. It was so strong and annoying that I said a bad word, went over there, opened the curtains, looked at my car. It was fine. Shut the curtains, went back, sat down, watched the news. Here it comes again, like ocean waves crashing over me. Someone's going to hit your car. Another bad word. Went over, looked at my car. It was fine. Back to the news. Finally, big crashing waves. Get up. Someone's about to hit your car. So I walked over, opened the curtains, and watched as a fellow was going down the sidewalk in front of my apartments. He walked on down the sidewalk, got into his car, which was located right, parked right in front of mine, put it into reverse and hit my car. So I fell down to my knees. I was shocked so badly, but I had enough presence of mind to get up, open the sliding door and say, hey, I saw that. He said, I'm stopping. It was no big deal, but it was without question precognitive.
Right.
End of story.
Let me ask you this, Art. How important was that car to you? Were you a gearhead like myself, or were you just someone who...
Yes, I loved my car.
Strong attachment to it, emotionally?
Strong attachment, yes.
Well, there you go. You know, so we have this for things... It's called need relevance. Things that are important to us.
Don't get me wrong. There are things in life, Doctor, that are more important to me than a car. But yes, I had my attachment to my car.
Right, and so... I mean, last car I had, every time days before or day before something was going to happen to it, I kept dreaming about it. I accepted it. It was, you know, it was fate. I mean, it's, again, the more important these things are to us at an emotional level, the more likely we are to access the information because they stand out. If it's boring, it's mundane, you're like, who cares? But if it grabs our attention because it threatens us or hurts us or potentially offers harm or drastic, dramatic change we don't want, we access it because like it's like, wow, what's that?
All right. Now let me circle back, Doctor. We've talked about precognition, talking about it now, and we've talked about poltergeists. Both of these things are a function of a living human brain. What I want to ask you now is, your book says aliens above, ghosts below. Now, this is what I'm interested in. Let's talk for a moment about ghosts below. Is that just a phrase, or in other words, here's what I'm interested in. Is there a communication from people who have died? Is there a communication from, in quotes, the other side? Proof of life after death, Doctor.
Put it this way. You couldn't go to a bank and bet on it. There's more data collected on UFOs, the real things, than you could go to court and win that there's something flying around our skies for more than 100 years.
Well, I don't know about that.
We don't know what they are and whatever. We don't know who they are. We don't know why they're here, but it's going on long before we existed as a culture. That you'd win on court in terms of, yes, something strange going on. In terms of proving contact with the dead, it's right now we can't because in science there's something called Occam's razor, which you've heard the term. Basically, it implies all things being equal, you go with the simplest explanation.
Right.
So before we assume something is paranormal, we've got to rule everything else out. Everything. Okay, then we get to the point, we start all over again. Start with the most simplistic explanation paranormally, and then you work your way up to the most outlandish, which, of course, is that we can communicate with the dead. And, you know, the sad part is that most of my cases, most of the things that are written about can be more readily and easily explained as the result of humanly generated psychokinetic force. That doesn't preclude the possibility of discarnate intelligence. We've had a few cases that suggest it, but then we find the same thing, the geomagnetic field, the people with temporal lobe epilepsy, neurological problems, sleep disorders. So the question is there any difference between all of us, or are we not just, you know, the story of the three blind men and the elephant that's been told, where one blind man holds the elephant's, is holding the elephant's leg and thinks it's a tree trunk. No. The other holds the elephant's tail and thinks it's the rope. No. The third holds the elephant's trunk and thinks it's the hose. No. Because of the situational awareness, because they're blind, they can't see the elephant, so they don't know what they're touching. This is where we are right now.
Well, so you mentioned UFOs, and sure enough, my lines could be full of a million UFO stories, but also mentioned ghosts, and my lines could be full of a million ghost stories. Now, I guess your answer would have to be, well, they don't really know what they're seeing.
Well, it's not know what they're seeing. It's easy to misinterpret things if you don't have a background to properly interpret them. It's like if ancient people hundreds of years ago saw a jet flying, they'd freak out because there are no jets. They have no way to reference it. There's nothing in their collective consciousness that can deal with this because they don't know what it is. And there have been millions of stories over the centuries with encounters with dead people. There were some great books. A great book called "Phone Calls from the Dead" by D. Scott Rogo and Raymond Bayless.
Or what about EVPs?
Right. Now, here's the story. We've collected a number of those over the years, and most of the time we can explain them as, again, the function of the psychokinetic ability of someone in the environment. And we've had cases where, you know, what's being said is directly related to one of the persons in the room, or it's their same voice. Do a voice print, it's the same voice, and they're living.
Well, I don't know. I've heard EVPs recorded by adults of children that were nowhere near any recorder, just inexplicable stuff.
Oh, no, I'm not saying it's someone speaking in the room. I'm saying it's all a product of psychokinesis. That's the thing is, it's hard to rule out this part because we don't know enough. So, again, in all my case files, the only case, if I had to make a bet, there was one case. And it's in chapter one of my book. It's called the Hollymont case, and it's still active. It's been there. The house is being renovated, and I got to live there for a couple of weeks back in 1976, and it was like being in Disneyland of the dead.
Mm-hmm.
Constant things going on. The owners had seen apparitions. We had object movements, things appearing and disappearing, you know, reports, disembodied voices. We had a news crew from KTTV who were chased out of the house by flying objects. And the newscasters just started freaking out really bad on camera. And now we discover there is a body buried beneath the house that's never been exhumed from 1923, named Regina. There's a tombstone down there. And two earthquake faults, which are still active, move. They're located a few feet away from the house, intersect a few feet away. And there happens to be a shallow river under the house, hydromagnetic forces.
And to what living brain do you attribute this?
It could be any one of us that are there. It's not only one person. The problem is you'd have to bring one person in at a time and have them be there alone to measure the environment and them.
Or it may not be a living brain. Now here's another one for you to tackle, and that is the unending, continuing stories of NDEs, near-death experiences, people do come back and relate things they could not possibly know that went on during the attempt to revive them or whatever it was. No, they were flatlined dead.
Right. Exactly.
And thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, we know of out-of-body experiences, and I suspect that most of these cases are an externalization of consciousness. And even somehow their body hasn't decayed enough where there's brain damage when they reawaken.
Mm.
But we know that people can leave their bodies and perceive things.
We
at a distance.
That's
very clearly established. The question is, what is it that leaves your body? We don't know. I mean, your body's still there. The heart's beating, you know. But if you go flatline for too long and the heart stops, there's brain damage due to oxygen deprivation,
right.
Hypoxia. So what? It's complicated here. And the question is, if we are all linked to this cloud, to this remote power field, and that's where all of our information resides, that means that there may not be any difference between us and people that have passed away. It may all be the same thing. And we're just interpreting it a certain way because this is all we're able to do right now.
Well, does what you just said allow for the possibility that after you die, there is a continuation in some form that we cannot conceive of right now?
Exactly. I believe that we know energy can't be created or destroyed. It can be changed from one form to another. I don't think, personally, we begin at birth, and I don't think we end at death. I think there's a transition to what I don't know from what we know. We're corporeal beings in a shell here, basically. But as far as the details of that, we just don't know. And like I said, I've had out-of-body experiences when I was younger. It was really incredible experiences. And I had one experience where it was a girl I was involved with where we kept having dreams about each other. When we weren't even together, we compared notes. They were the same. We checked the notes out, and they turned out to be quite accurate from historical events long before we were born. What was that? They're accessing information remotely. There is no time. There is no space. And my book gets into this. If you're dealing with information, information is described basically paranormally by where it appears to come from where you are when you perceive it. If the information comes from the past, well, that's retrocognition. If it comes from the future, it's precognition. If it comes from the present, it's either telepathy or clairvoyance, which is what remote viewing is, basically. And the question is it any different? No, it's probably all the same. We just have to call it something to differentiate it from itself.
And I understand you actually wrote some of the baselines for remote viewers. Is that true?
Yes. Basically, with simple learning paradigms. This purpose was to take normal, healthy people who aren't in psychotherapy or analysis, who aren't using drugs, and see if you could take them and train them to reliably access remote information.
All right. Doctor, hold on. Relax. I'm going to give you a little extra break because I want to allow the audience to join in this conversation. There's more to come. But I do want them to join in. So our public telephone number is area code 952-225-5278. That's how you can reach us and ask Dr. Taff a question. It's pretty incredible stuff. Once again, area code 952-225-5278. So if you'd like to be part of the conversation, that's one way. Another way is by... Well, I don't know, if you've got an Apple phone or a whatever kind of smartphone you've got, add us. Get Skype. Skype is free. It's wonderful. You download Skype, put it on your phone, and then add us. If you're in North America, we are MITD51. MITD51, midnight in the desert, MITD51. If you're outside North America, we have a special Skype for just you, MITD51. 55. That's MITD 55. So, love to have you join in the conversation. We're going to take a break, and then we'll be back with Dr. Barry Taff. And things that we just can't explain, I guess. I'm Art Bell, and you're listening to Midnight in the Desert.
Dark Matter Network News. I'm Amy Martin. A Halloween prop lying face down on a lawn in Detroit has prompted a 911 call this week when authorities thought that someone had been brutally attacked. The homeowner had police show up to her door expecting to respond to a potential murder, but the woman told police that she had used the prop for an annual prank. The woman then revealed that she would move the prop around her yard every morning to spoof unsuspecting passers-by, observing their horror while she drinks her coffee during the days leading up to Halloween. The large scarecrow-like body, featuring a pair of work overalls stuffed into old shoes, appears to unsuspecting witnesses as a man lying face down with a pillowcase wrapped over his head. One person had even attempted to perform CPR on the prop this year, she told Detroit News. Once they find out it's a dummy, it's so hilarious. While authorities may be unenthused, it's a tradition that she's carried on for several years to celebrate her husband's birthday, and she doesn't plan on stopping it anytime soon. A man has captured images of what he describes as a prehistoric bird with an alien entity in skies over Southern California. According to CryptoZoologyNews.com, C. Wilson, who didn't reveal his exact location in the Golden State, says he spots different anomalies, including what he believes to be creatures, almost every month. He writes, "It's difficult to see these objects when going several thousand miles per hour. For some reason, they engage me." He also claims to regularly witness flying orbs and rods, with different animals appearing next to these UFOs in the skies. He also writes, "The red orb follows me with one turkey vulture that always hangs with it. The chrome orb has 33 seagulls that hang with it, and the blue orb has 9 red-tailed hawks that also hang with it. The flying rods are intelligent and not rods at all." One image appears to depict what some have described as a pterosaur, and the other appears to be a 4-legged hot dog flying above the clouds. He finally writes, "I have a gift to catch these critters and UFOs and aliens as they fly by me. Follow me, touch me, and sometimes I hear my name. They are intelligent. I see if they can hear me, which they can. I can prove that, and most important, I can prove that we are being engaged." Read more about this story on CryptoZoologyNews.com. A town in Connecticut has resurrected a fall tradition. After an elementary school decided to cancel Halloween, outraged parents and children stood up to defend the holiday. The school claims that the initial decision to cancel festivities came from wanting to cater to children and families who felt that the holiday was either religiously or culturally offensive. The school district has since reversed its decision, as they felt that the outcry over canceled activities had become a distraction. Have a strange story or a news tip? Email amy@artbell.com. This has been Amy Martin for Dark Matter Network News.
Hi, everybody. My guest is Dr. Barry Taff. We are talking of things that, are inexplicable. And they still cannot be explained. We can make pretty good, decent, educated guesses at them, but that's about it. Doctor, a couple of other items before we go to the phones. I know a lot of people have experiences that they would like to ask you about. But abductions. I want to cover a few areas here that we haven't really talked about. Abductions, for example. Are you convinced, or have you been convinced, that abductions are the real thing?
In some cases, they're very real. I don't believe everything everyone tells to me or read about, but there are some really good cases out there that, in my opinion, stand up because of some intriguing evidence that's been collected. This is not recent. I mean, there's good evidence that abductions may go back a very long ways in time.
And I know.
We might have misinterpreted them. And what's even more extraordinary, Art, is that we have cases that began as an abduction that had paranormal fallout, or began as paranormal experiences and had an abduction.
Okay, let me run something by you that's kind of in the news because it got started here. I interviewed Dr. David Jacobs and others, I might add, who are making claims that they believe and can prove that there are half-humans that have been genetically altered during abductions, and that there is, in essence, an invasion underway, and we are slowly being changed as humans, and we are being invaded by our changed selves, would be a way to put it, I guess.
I've read about that. I've read Dr. Jacobs' books. He's an excellent writer. I don't know why he's necessarily subscribed to his theories and conclusions about what's going on. I'm not saying it's impossible or it can't happen or it shouldn't or wouldn't. It sounds too much like an episode of The Invaders or Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Well, it does.
Yeah, and what I suspect is...
But I would say, let me add, it could very well be true. I mean, if you were going to invade a planet, a populated planet full of gun-toting people, I might add, you might well want to do it very subtly, very slowly, and over a very long period of time. And if you had the ability to genetically modify, I can't think of a better way to do it. If you give it some serious thought, it does make sense.
Well, we know for a fact that there's more than one race that's been visiting Earth for a very long time. And there's substantial evidence, which I discuss in my book, that we, meaning the human race, might be the result of their interference in normal evolution here.
Hear, hear.
And this is discussed in depth in my book. Leonard Stringfield, a lot of his money, bought everything he ever wrote, and it's some really good evidence collected, which I republished in my book, and I all referenced appropriately. And one of the, my conclusions at this point is that whoever these beings are, they may know something about our future we don't. Meaning, maybe we're not going to survive here, and they do want to replace us. Or maybe they want to take our genetic makeup, take it to another star system, and build another race with it.
Maybe. I don't know how what your, you know, this kind of crosses over into the political realm, and I don't really want to do that. But there is, I think, substantial science showing that our planet is in really, really, really serious trouble. And if we don't modify our behavior, or perhaps it's time for a statement that it's too late to modify our behavior to change what's going to happen. And so for that reason, they might be interfering. Does that touch a nerve?
Yeah. I've read about stuff like that. I've heard people discuss it. To be honest with you, I'm more worried about the fact that we can't trust our government to tell us the truth about anything anymore.
I know.
Going back decades, it's nothing new.
Right.
And I discuss, here's the whole thing, this is in my book and in my website. If we are the result of someone else's experiment, and they're not from Earth, that means we have an inconceivable future and an inconceivable past and unimaginable future. It throws into question everything about the human race.
Yeah.
It kind of messes up religion big time.
Oh, yes.
And ethnicity. And the last thing we need on Earth right now, amongst all the insanity going on, is another reason for people to go nuts. So if you were in charge of the disclosure of such volatile, earth-shaking information that would basically disenfranchise all of us, would you do it to please a few, knowing that the end result might be utter chaos, or would you not do it and hold it back? We don't need more problems. What would you do?
If I was in charge of...
You're the one that could flip the switch and say, make the disclosure, let the whole world know about this. What would you do? Would you risk humanity to bring this to the public? Or would you say, no, it's too dangerous, let's keep a lid on it?
Well, you're probably not going to like my answer. I think that I would say it is too dangerous, let's keep a lid on it.
No, that's what most normal, rational, intelligent people would say. In the end, what good would it serve? I mean, not that I wouldn't like this disclosure. I think we need it in the near future. It might be catastrophic and be the most destabilizing information ever given to us. In the end, it would probably help us because we'd all realize we're all one people. I don't care where you're from, what your color is, what you look. We're all the same. We all breathe the same air and eat food and... We all get old and eventually die, so we're all going through that. But I just think in the short term, the chaos could be horrendous.
Mm-hmm.
And it wouldn't, there's a good deal of suggestive evidence out there, and some of this is on my website, that the real reason JFK was killed wasn't for whatever people suspect. It might have been he was about to disclose the most closely guarded secret on Earth.
He might have been. All right, I do have one more really big question for you, and then I guess we'll try and dive into the phone lines. And by the way, I forgot to mention, I do now have a first-time caller line, which is area code 775-285-5800. So if you have never called the show, that's what it means. You're a first-time caller. Area code 775-285-5800. Doctor, what do you know about a secret space program?
Well, I've read and listened. I've read every book Richard Dolan has written. I've talked with him on numerous occasions. He was on my show for a couple of years ago. I had a brief podcast show. And I've seen all his interviews online. I believe he's telling the truth. I believe there's evidence supporting the fact we have a secret space program. It's well beyond anything NASA is willing to discuss. We may have crewed starships, not like the Starship Enterprise. We may have reverse-engineered UFOs, developed something equivalent to warp drive. And before Ben Rich died, the ex-head of Lockheed Skunk Works, he was at Lockheed. He was at UCLA Alumni Engineering in the early 90s giving a talk. And he said some great things that's been replayed over and over. When he said, we have things flying that would make George Lucas drool. We now know how to take E.T. home in real time. And he said, then afterwards, when the crowd thinned out, I went up to him and I talked to him. I said, the technology you speak of, did you develop it or did you acquire it? Mm-hmm. He goes, what do you think? Because I think the latter. He goes, you might be right. Will this stuff ever be released to the public? He goes, how old are you? I was in my early 40s then. He goes, no, it's not going to happen. Why? Because right. It's world-changing.
All right. It's world-changing is right. And here's the problem I have with it. If we had a drive of the type you talked about, so we could have a secret space program, so we're going to other star systems doing all kinds of wild things, this drive would be an energy source that would yank us out of this horrid, horrid problem we have right now, burning fossil fuels and endangering the future of the planet, period. And they would be withholding that from us for what?
Well, the same reason Westinghouse, every time someone tries to develop Tesla's technology and scale it up to make it useful for power generation or
right.
applications, Westinghouse puts a cease and desist order in and stops them. A lot of people, remember, there's trillions of dollars wrapped up in petrochemical energy. It runs the earth. Mm-hmm. And when we do run out, who knows how long it'll be, they'll say, oh, look what we just found. Here it is. On my website, I have a blog called Building a Warp Drive Engine. It goes into depth on what's been done, on when I talk some theories and suggestions. It talks about Richard Dolan. I give reference to one of his online. You can see it on YouTube. It's a great 90-minute lecture, and everyone should see this. It's about the secret space program from Amsterdam in the fall of 2011. And it doesn't get any better than Richard Dolan. I mean, just it doesn't. And his collection of information is very impressive. He makes a great point, and he can support it with facts.
Okay. All right. Let's go to the phones. I know a lot of people want to talk to you. Let's go all the way to, I think, Hilo, Hawaii. You're on the air. Hi.
Hi. Art, is that you?
That's me. Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, my name is Ricardo.
Okay.
I had a question. Is consciousness – okay, so can we actually become more conscious without – alien intervention? I mean, there's all these theories you guys were discussing where, you know, aliens could be a part of getting a part of like our genetic changes and things along those lines. Is it just possible that we are actually becoming more conscious, where we're actually seeing the detriment of what our government has done, what people have done to each other, where we're actually good people and we're just being more conscious and there's no alien explanation involved? You know what I mean?
Doctor?
It's a complicated question he asks, and there isn't a simple answer, but I think we're finally seeing through the BS haze that's been put up for decades, we're realizing we can't trust the words coming out of the mouth of politicians, and they all have ulterior motives and reasons. And I don't for one instant even doubt that.
So are you saying that it's not possible? Because, I mean, again, you're going back to government things.
Well, no. I agree. We're becoming more aware, consciously and otherwise, because it's an extension of actually mass media and culture. People could finally access information by just sitting in front of a screen. They don't have to go to a library and spend days or months or years going through books.
Exactly.
More aware.
If we've made huge strides at recognizing that we're all connected, I mean, we're all created from this energy that connects all of us. So, I mean, that's consciousness. That's consciousness just becoming greater and greater. Like, can we just recognize that things kind of, you know, time-wise, time is a tricky thing, so let's not get into it because that would take forever. But consciously, We are actually one living energy between all living things, between trees, earth, plants, everything that's living. And in this consciousness, there is this growth that occurs simply because of who we are. It has nothing to do with some outside force. The government can do what it's going to do. People are going to do what they're going to do. But in this consciousness, in what consciousness is, we are actually growing as people. Is that possible, or does it have to be some sort of outside alien influence that allows us? I feel like that takes away our power as people, honestly.
Well, I don't think that aliens are affecting our consciousness. I mean, they can, whatever these things are, clearly have manipulated our perceptual abilities and ability to understand. But I think we are evolving and changing much more rapidly now because of our exposure to information based on what we're doing, not based on what aliens are doing. And maybe this is a concern of them. Maybe we are growing in a way, but our proclivities haven't really changed. They've just grown along with us.
All right, brother. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. You guys are awesome. Art, I love you, man. You're great.
Thank you, buddy. Take care.
Thank you.
That's Hilo, Hawaii. First-time caller line. Again, area code 775-285-5800. Love hearing from people for the first time. It's exciting, actually. Let's go to Skype and Kurt. Hello, Kurt.
Hi. Hi, Mr. Bell.
Hi.
I heard your car story where you saw somebody hit your car. I had something similar happen to me back in 96. I was living in downtown Phoenix on the top floor of this apartment complex. And all of a sudden, dead asleep, must have been 2, 3, 4 in the morning, just got up out of bed and walked toward the door. And I just had to go outside. And I went outside and I lived right on the corner of the top floor and looked down at my truck and there were these two idiots trying to take my tires off my truck.
Oh, God.
And I hollered down at them that I'm calling the police and I got a gun and all that. And, boy, they took off like nobody's business. But I went down there. All the lug bolts were off. And one of the – they even left a jack there because they
Let me ask. Did you have this overwhelming feeling that something like this was going on?
I just know that when I woke up, I was almost like I was robotic or I just had to go outside. I don't know. I just had to go outside. And as soon as I did, if I would have been 5 minutes later, my tires would have been gone.
Sure, sure.
But that happened. Just a story. I don't have any question. I just want to let you all know that. That really did happen, too.
Oh, I believe you. I believe you, Kurt. Thank you very much. I appreciate the call. And so there you go, Doctor. Another one. You could endlessly hear stories like that. So precognition is absolutely real. I don't know what triggers it, and I wish I did. I wish I could continually do it. I'd be rich.
What things seems to have relevance emotionally to us? So you really love your car, and my God, you don't want this thing stolen or destroyed, and you have this passion. What's going on? And it'd be like if you were married, and why you don't want someone to hurt your wife or take your wife away. It's that same bonding. It may not appear like it.
Look, I don't. I hate that phrase. I love my car. I liked my car. It served a useful function, but I wasn't like a lot of people. I wasn't a car nut. I didn't go out and go, oh, car, I love you. You know, I wasn't like that with my car. It's just a thing. So I don't want to overblow it.
No, but see, even though it may not be a conscious thing, you know, like we all go out and buy certain cars for certain needs. We like the way it looks, the way it feels, the way it drives, the way it sounds, versus just buying any piece of junk we're in front of our eyes.
Now my 98 Firebird Trans Am, I love that. Okay.
Great car. I used to have it for Trans Am a long time ago.
That car I love, but this car was just a car, and I can't say that I was in love with it. But nevertheless, here came this precognitive feeling, and it was it just was not possible to ignore. It was so strong. I don't know what I could compare it to. It was just overwhelming.
Let me give you another story about precognition and me that dealt with a car.
All right.
This is 1970. I was dating a girl in college, upper division college, named Sharon, and beautiful. We got along really well, and suddenly the dreams came. In the dream, I'm in the back seat of a car. I see her in the passenger seat. It was Sharon. I saw someone driving, but I couldn't tell if it was me. I couldn't even see the dashboard of the car. So we're going, turned down the street to go to her home, which was on a cul-de-sac. We turn down, a much larger car comes out, hits us head on, there's glass, there's fire, and I see Sharon's body unconscious, bloody. I'm going, oh,
yeah,
no.
Yeah, yes.
And the dream happened once and twice and over and over, and I'm going, this isn't good. So I said, look, I'm going to have to tell Sharon. So I told her, and she was angry at me, you know, when I told her I can't see anymore, not for the reasons I would suspect that it scared her. She thought I was making it up because they didn't want to drive all the way out to see her. And I said, look, the whole purpose is if we're dead, we're not doing anyone any good.
Mm-hmm.
She got very angry. Fred, I don't blame her. And she did, relationship ended. And then time went by. She started dating someone else. Well, okay. Everything happened that I saw, except he was killed. She was badly injured. I just put myself, my ego put me in the driver's seat. I didn't change a damn thing.
Good Lord.
And this is the question is, the reason I dreamt about it was because it was relevant to me and my emotions.
Okay, let me ask this. In the dreams that you had, you were part of the dream when you had them, correct?
I was in the back seat of the car.
Usually when I'm thinking of a girl on a back seat, we're both in the back seat. But yeah, anyway, you were in the back seat of the car. You were part of that dream. And but when that didn't happen, an alternative future happened with somebody else, and the dream came absolutely true.
Right. In other words, my own ego put me in the driver. I thought, oh, my God, what's me? I'm driving because they're Sharon. I never saw me. I assumed it was me. I couldn't tell who it was. I couldn't see the person's face at all.
Right.
So I thought, must be me because I'm dating this woman. So if I don't date her anymore, the problem will be solved.
I was
wrong.
Okay, gotcha. All right, Doctor, a short two-minute break. A lot of people want to talk to you. Dr. Barry Taff is my guest. He's been researching paranormal stuff. Aliens Above, Ghosts Below. You got to love the name of that book, Aliens Above, Ghosts Below. And we'll tell you more about the website and so forth as we move along. All right, Doctor, we're sort of into a lot of calls here. So you ready?
Sure.
All right. Let's go to a first-time caller in Wisconsin. Hello.
Hi.
Hi there.
This is Luke in Stevens Point. I'm calling tonight because I had a pretty interesting sighting tonight, actually.
Oh?
More specifically, it was three circles, like, together that formed a rectangular shape. I've never seen anything like it on film or anything. That's why
Slow up for a second. You hold on. You had this sighting. This was in the sky. This was.
Oh, this was big, like close. It was pretty cool.
Okay, you're describing a craft?
Yeah. It flew across the sky, not a sound, very fast. This is my third sighting in like 5 years, too, which relates to my question.
Okay.
My question is. More specific to, like, I realize sightings and abduction, the connection with abduction and all that, but why does it seem that sometimes, like, they're almost putting on a show for people? Like, and
yes.
It's Stephen Greer, I mean, a lot of his group, and, like, you know, I'm not the only person at this.
We're going to have Stephen on pretty soon, actually. I don't want to give the date, but soon. You're right, though. Doctor, he said sometimes it seems like they're putting on a show, and I agree with him. Sometimes it does. Comments?
Yes. Oh, yeah. I've been going back just over the last 45 to 50 years. Some of these events are spectacular. I mean, there's the Phoenix Lights back in the 90s. There have been other displays, which are sure you can look at. They're well-known. They're up on YouTube, and when you have a triangular craft, I'm a little concerned that it may not necessarily be alien, because Lockheed Martin has the TR-3B, which doesn't propel itself normally. It has a magnetic disruptor engine called magnetoplasma drive. This is discussed on my website, and it neutralizes like more than 90% of the inertia of the vehicle, which means very little energy can make it move very quickly and do things other vehicles can't, and it's completely silent.
So all right, I'm out of the story relating thing, but I certainly had my own sighting of a monstrous triangular craft. And to prevent me from going on, Al, you're on the air on Skype. Hi
there. Okay, so I just had a thought. So regarding EVPs, for example,
sure.
I've recorded my own, and it was that of a child, a very high-quality EVP, a couple in one session, and I've heard many others which seem to be real. My question is, I haven't seen today any compelling evidence, any video evidence of poltergeist activities throwing things across the room. I would love to see that, and if you know these news stories of your guest saying that reporters visiting these haunted houses and witnessing this stuff, has any of it been recorded? And if not, could it be that these entities don't want us to observe them visually for whatever reason?
You know, caller, let me say something quickly. I'm 70 years old. I've had a few that, you know, of what I would describe as paranormal experiences, but that's over a span of 70 years. Now, what are the odds of a camera crew going out and catching, let us say, a frying pan going across the room, as Dr. Taff explained a little while ago? Odds of that, about a gazillion to one.
But then why are EVPs so much more common then?
Good question, doctor.
Well, I mean, first of all, EVPs, you know, the whole point is you don't have to sit around and wait. You do the recording and then play it back. So it's more at your discretion of when you're going to do it. Mm. You know, when you go out and investigate cases of hauntings or poltergeists or whatever you want to call them, the chance of you actually being there when something happens and recording it to document it is astronomical. I've been on thousands of cases. You know, we measure interesting things. We measure the people. We measure the environment. We ask a lot of probing medical questions, and we come to interesting conclusions. But the chance of us actually seeing it happen and have the camera aimed in the right place at the right time is astronomical.
Oh, boy, are you right.
And that's why when you have these silly shows that, you know, every week they catch stuff, I'm going, come on. It's like, how many times can you win the lottery in a row?
I have one more question.
Has your guest
ever heard of John Hutchinson, the Canadian physicist? Well, South Bay physicist. And he recently, last I heard, using his equipment, opened up some sort of portal where he claims that he and his partner saw shadow people.
Really?
Yes.
All right. Do me a favor, caller, before you go, and then we'll address your question. If you have really good EVPs, send them to me. Would you?
I will. Actually, my friends are musicians, and they digitized it from cassette to a high-quality digital for me. I got very lucky.
Excellent. All right. Please send them along. I'll play them Halloween night. In fact, that goes for all of you. ArtBell@KNYE.com. ArtBell@KNYE.com. I would love to have them. So thank you very much, Al. Look forward to that. Doctor?
Yes, I know of Hutchinson. I've seen videos of things that have happened. And the problem is, even though what he's doing is amazing and some of the results are amazing, he doesn't keep or hasn't kept really great notes, so he can't replicate what he's doing all the time, which is problematic. The question is, is he creating an electromagnetic environment that causes these effects to occur, or is he able to change the environment in such a way to allow it to occur? And he doesn't keep notes. He doesn't keep, you know, like, what he's doing, so he can't reproduce it all the time.
Right.
Which is the problem with all of this. If this stuff could be reproduced in a lab all the time, we wouldn't call it paranormal.
All right. So were you referring to Hutchinson?
Yes, Hutchinson.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I've seen some stuff written, and I've seen some of the videos linked to him, and they're fascinating. But, you know, you can't do them all the time, so it's like, okay, well, where do we go?
We go to Anchorage, Alaska right now. Hi, you're on Midnight.
Thanks, Art. Again, a great show. The problem I have is you've gone so many places that I'm confused and nearly crippled, but I'm going to try, okay? First of all, I want to share with you from the smoke experience. I smoked for 30 years and quit, and I think I had some kind of intervention. And just for what it's worth, I don't think you have a clue why you smoke, but if you saw what happened to me, I think at that time, then you'd understand. Moving on, your listening audience, along with the doctor, needs to look at ECAT.com. I think they discovered a new form of fusion that's breaking the known laws of physics. This is tremendously big. And
there are all kinds of people working on fusion engines right now. You're aware of that, right?
Well, I am, but in staying focused, it isn't me. I'm the messenger. And
okay.
I've been tracking this now for 3 years, but if you'll just check out the site and make your own determinations, I can take you in a more depth place. But it's not it's low, LENR, low energy nuclear reaction, but the players in this are very large, and it's, I've been tracking, just check it out and come to your own conclusion. We think he's going to breach in March, and our world is about to see an evolutionary leap in mankind's understanding of energy. Now, setting that aside, going back to Mr. Taft, some of your comments here.
Dr. Taft, yes.
Dr. Taft, I'm going to see if I can't wrap my mind around this, and then you can learn me up and put me back on course. And boy, I'm going to hesitate talking about UFOs, and I'd love to, but I'm going to hesitate. It seems to me that what you're suggesting to me, I think I heard a long time ago, and that is that everything is the consequence of competing thoughts. Everything, your hand, we understand, is the product of a competing thought. That thought is in a state of near energy without mass, and it has intelligence. The difficulty with that energy is that it has to consume to maintain its energy disposition. And if that's the case, what you're really talking about is a form of energy which seeks to find, and please help me through this, it's your fault I'm in this standpoint. Anyway, it seeks to find a relevant state of harmony, which then defines its state of being, which gives us an understanding as to how vast the wonders of it all is. And if that is the case, then we would be a mere amoeba on the floor of a jungle floor, given all the creatures in there. We would be nearly insignificant, but which takes you to the next step like a puzzle.
Okay, well, we don't have a lot of time here, so if you have a question that evolves from this.
The real mystery would be, and I'll shut this down, the real mystery to be would be that who's holding the order of all of these manifestations that we call poltergeists and UFOs and humans and animals and plants and states of being? And I hope that wasn't too complex. It's a great show again, Art.
All right. Well, thank you very much. I'm not sure that I got all of that, Doctor. Maybe you did.
The best thing I could say was the energies we know of in the universe, and there's only four types of energy we know of, are all exothermic. They emit heat.
Right.
Whatever this force is that is involved with the paranormal, not that mediates it with us, but the actual energy itself appears to be endothermic.
Right.
And again, there's nothing else we know of like that. There have been discussions of, remember the guy who was, some guy who was funding a fusion reactor a couple decades ago, for Bob Guccione or something like that, and all these things about building a gigawatt class small fusion reactors. Nothing was ever built or tested or developed. There's all this stuff going on. I know that up at Nova Sheva, up at Lawrence Livermore, they were doing experiments. It's inertial confinement. Fusion, and they fire, terawatt or petawatt class lasers to compress deuterium and tritium to produce that fusion. Mm. And when they're doing this, they're finding energy coming in from sources they don't know where it's coming from, like another dimension. They pretty much stopped doing the work because they ran out of money. So, but there's evidence that there's stuff out there in other levels of reality we're not aware of yet, and we may be seeing, this is the first indication of it in the world we live in every day, is that there's a force of nature that can do incredible things. Some of us can unconsciously mediate it. And if we can do that, what can't we do?
All right, well, here's what I would say. Back in the 90s, when I was doing talk radio, and up through the early 2000s, I wasn't hearing people describing engines that they were working on that would get us not just off the planet, Doctor, but to other stars. And I'm hearing now, in this year and this time, all kinds of people working on these engines that will get us off the planet, and I mean really off the planet. And there's so many people working on it, it's like there's got to be something going on, because there are a lot of people working on these engines, various kinds of engines. I don't want to say fusion, because propulsion can be produced in many ways. There are many people working.
What I discuss on my website about building a warp drive engine has nothing to do with pretty much with fusion. It's
right.
Using compressed
thank you.
Mercury. Einstein Bose condensate plasmas that are rotated at high speed, and they induce inertial
there you go.
Torsion field and frame dragging, and they can manipulate
yep.
space.
Yep, I'm hearing all about that. Robert, you're on the air with my guest. Hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Fine.
I was a late coming to the show tonight. I heard what sounded like.
Okay, again, you don't have a good connection, Robert.
Can you hear me?
I hear you, but you're kind of going in and out. Get real close to the mic.
Okay, I'm as close as I can get.
Okay, give it a try.
I came at the end of what sounded like the...
I'm sorry, Robert. We're just not going to be able to get what you're saying. I'm terribly sorry. But we've got to be able to understand the question. Lakeport, California. Hi.
Yes, good evening. It's Adrian Vance.
Yes, sir.
Friend of Barry Taff and you. You know, we used to talk when I was on KDWN.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Anyway, there's evidence for this cloud theory that you may have of human intelligence. In the there was a woman who died recently in India, who was a mathematician who did once the 23rd root of a 201 digit number in 50 seconds, and it took UNIVAC 62 seconds. And the only way this would be possible would be if this problem had been solved somewhere, and that there's like a library of all these things somewhere in space. You know what I mean?
Well, they used to call that the Akashic Records long ago. And now, I mean, I would describe it as holographic space-time, where information is equally distributed anywhere. Everything is everywhere, informationally speaking. By the way, Mr. Vance, were you ever the West Coast editor of Popular Photography?
Yes, I was. Yeah.
Oh.
And Adrian, then I've known you for more than 40 years.
Yes, right, yeah.
You were my chemistry teacher at high school. Remember?
That is correct.
My God, Adrian, it's amazing. And you analyzed our picture entity photo for Popular Photography back in 1976.
That is correct.
Yeah.
Really?
Wow.
Okay, well then let me ask, you analyzed that photograph. We've extensively been talking about that photograph. What did you conclude?
Well, I concluded that it probably was not a fake, but beyond that, I really could not tell very much.
You know, I remember he said
it was so strange. I said in the piece in the magazine that it looked to me like it was authentic, but I could not explain. You know, it was just so strange that I had no explanation for it.
Yeah, we gave him the negative. He examined it, and he said, "I remember you said that the lens of an SLR camera would prohibit such an image from occurring." And you said you have no idea what made this. But the negative was untouched. There was no alteration of the negative.
Remarkable. If I may ask, since you're an expert in this area, how do you make a determination about whether something is real or fake?
Well, there are methods that you can use in examining the image under a microscope and so forth, and you see whether or not images appear to be layered. But an awful lot of it is just intuition. You know, if you are used to producing it, I was in the business of making, special effects, fake images. So when you do that, you learn how these things look. Yeah. Well, how they ultimately look on film. And they have a certain characteristic, their edges and so forth that you look for. Well, when you look at a picture where there's a question, and you don't see that kind of overlapping in one thing and another, then you have reason to believe that this is an authentic photograph.
Okay, well, you mentioned a negative. So obviously it was on film. It was quite a while ago. I would imagine much harder to fake. We live in an era now where, I don't know if you've been to the movies lately, but they can do things that are as real as real.
Well, I'll tell you, photo analysis is over as far as authentication is concerned, because the digital things, as you say, CGI work is just simply so incredible. There's no way that you can say with any authority that it's fake.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we live, it's kind of too bad. It's kind of a shame because
it is too bad.
There was a day when you could say, it's a fake, and you could prove it's a fake, and now... What do we do now?
Well, I'll tell you, Art. I have an idea about the whole UFO thing. I've written a couple of books about UFOs, but the idea that I have is that these things are not really from outer space. They are from another time.
It's as good a guess, frankly, unless you want to enlarge on how you know that. It's as good a guess as another planet or another system.
Well, it would take me a while to lay it all out, but I think I have a very good hypothesis for it.
All right. Well, thank you for the call. It's been wonderful having you on, and Dr. Taff.
Wow, unbelievable. Adrian Van, I'll never forget his name, ever.
Well, all right, take on what he said. Now, he said UFOs could be from another time, and couldn't they as easily be from another time?
Well, if you're able to warp space and time to transit from one star to another, you are moving through time in one sense.
Okay, but I think he had a...
There's stuff about the Rendlesham Forest case, you know, Bentwaters thing.
Oh, yes.
Now, one of the things came out when they're suggesting that the information suggests that the vehicles that landed were from our future and they were doing things to help us survive. It's, you know, that's the latest stuff I've seen on some shows. I don't know. It's intriguing. It's interesting. Doesn't mean it's real. Doesn't mean I know that one of the guys touched a vehicle and it seems to have put some stuff in his head. That's what he believes. Some kind of induction process.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, beyond all that, I mean, I will never forget Adrian Vance's name, ever. It's just, I remember in the lab one day, Dr. Moss calls from the office below. She said, Barry, come down. Someone wants to meet you. I walked out. There's Adrian Vance. I'll never forget his name.
My goodness. Isn't that amazing? Wow. Flipska, hello. You're on the air.
Hello, Art. Hello, Doctor.
Hi.
I had a question for the doctor. What is the scariest thing you have experienced?
Okay, again, we're having trouble with your connection as well, Flipska. What are you on?
I'm on a smartphone, a Skype.
Okay, would take us off speakerphone, please.
It's not on
speakerphone. You must be on speakerphone.
It's not. I think it's just
connection. Okay, it's a very bad connection, Flipska.
Okay, let me try again.
All right, well, I don't know.
The doctor has experience.
No. You're not, we can't discern what you're saying.
Okay, well, that's fine. Thank you.
All right, well, you got better at the end there.
Yeah.
I don't know what people are doing that they can't get. Listen, lesson here. Don't use speakerphones. Never use speakerphones, especially when you call a radio show. And definitely do not use, little earpiece, a Bluetooth earpiece. That's also death on a stick. Let's go to here and say hi. You're on the air. Hello. Going once, going twice, and gone. You instead are on the air in Arizona somewhere.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, sir. I just wanted to speak to the doctor. I had an experience many years ago, and I've never had anybody explain to me what this was. I was dating a girl. We were out. We came back to her house, brought fast food. She went outside, and I'm sitting there on a couch, and literally the bag turns sideways. The hamburger comes out of the bag in front of me and starts to unwrap. And I ask her about it, and she goes, "Oh, that's Bob." I'm like, "Well, who's Bob?" "Well, he's a spirit that's been following me forever." When we got married, and she was gone quite a bit on the road, at night, every night while she was gone, there'd be a glow in the corner of the same room, up like in the corner, almost like a hive.
Can we go back for a second? I'll call her to the burger. I want to hear that again.
We had gone out. She was a singer at the time, and I watched her sing that night, and we decided to get some food on the way home.
Yes.
And we walked in the house, and she's like, "Hey, I'm going to go change."
Yes.
So she went in the other room. I set the bag of burgers down like on a coffee table. And kind of laid back and started to watch TV, and all of a sudden the bag just kind of went sideways.
Yes.
And literally one of the burgers came, like I reached my hand in the bag kind of thing and pulled the burger out. Well, I was nowhere near the bag, and I'm watching the burger come out of the bag, and then the wrapping off the burger starts to come off.
Oh, man, that's not just fast food. I mean, that's self-de-wrapping food.
Yeah, seriously, I was completely shocked. And then the bag was like shaking, like from the inside, like somebody's got their hand inside the bag. Oof. And I yelled at her, and she walked in and she's like, "What?" And I'm like, the burger. It just came out of the bag, and she's like, oh, that's Bob.
Bob.
I'm like, who the hell is Bob?
Yeah, who the hell is Bob?
Well, he's been following me since I was a little girl. But every time she was gone, this glowing ball of energy would sit in the, and I tried to debunk it. I checked to make sure it wasn't, you know, lights from a different house.
Yeah.
I blacked out the windows. I blacked out the doors. And the ball would still be there. Every time I would take out a camera to try to take a picture of it, it would go through the wall into the next room.
Mm.
So I'd go into the next room, try to take a picture, and come back into the other room. It did not want to be photographed. When we got into arguments, I would feel like we had a huge fight one time. She walked outside. I started to walk out into the living room, and I got thrown. So I don't know what it is, but nobody's ever been able to give me a logical explanation as to how a hamburger gets pulled out of a bag, unwrapped right in front of me, and there's nobody within 5 feet of the damn thing.
Doctor?
Well, first of all, how long did it take for the hamburger to come out and unwrap itself?
In all seriousness, it would have been no different if you'd reached into a bag, grabbed a hamburger, and unwrapped it. It was that quick.
So 20 seconds? 15, 20 seconds, 30 seconds.
I'm thinking, how can this, there's no way, I'm the one that carried the bag in.
Yeah, he's asking you how long, 15 seconds, 20, 30?
Maybe 20 seconds, maybe. I mean, it was just like somebody was hungry and they wanted to get to the food.
And let me ask you, did either you or your wife have any type of medical problems in terms of sleep disorders or epilepsy or?
No, nothing like that.
Nothing in your backgrounds, neither background?
No. And so nothing in either one of ours.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And this was centered around your was this your girlfriend or your wife?
My ex-wife now, but yeah, but I mean, it was centered around her, and it had been going on since she was a little girl and she was adopted. And I mean, she was as a baby, but from the time that she could remember, this thing's always been with her and has gone every location she's ever lived. But the weird thing was she was in Europe and the thing was still in the house.
And she was how old was she at the time?
She was in her early 30s.
And how old were you at the time?
Mid-30s.
Yeah, I mean, obviously this is interesting. It's linked to her, but it's also linked to an environment, which we've seen in cases where phenomena will continue to exist in one environment, yet one of the people, the agents, will leave, and it continues to propagate around them as well, which is, we've had that in a couple of cases. But again, it would take a great deal of time to ask and take, you know, a lot of questions, a lot of measurements of the environment of the people, and we might get answers. But it sounds like a really intriguing case.
I'll tell you this. I love Quarter Pounders, but if one of them unwraps itself, I'm running.
It was something, and there were so many things that occurred during the time we were together that it got, you know, and thankfully I don't spook easily. I mean, I'm an archaeologist, so my idea is like, you know, investigate, always check.
Try
to figure it out.
I think you're perfectly within your rights to be spooked by that, my friend. I sure would be, my God, can't even imagine, but I can imagine in my mind. I can visualize a burger unwrapping itself. Jason on Skype.
Hey, Art. Hello, Doctor.
Hello.
I have actually had a thought for a while now. I'm sure you have heard of the entire Amityville incident in New York.
Oh, sure.
Yes, I have.
Now, I've read currently that there's a new tenant, a new owner, what have you. Why do you think that, say, the entire story of the Lux family, who had such a horrific experience and whatnot, and all the owners that have had the place since then, you know, there's not been any more reporting of anything to, like, as far as I know, any paranormal activity whatsoever after their entire experience?
I guess the answer would be it was with them. I interviewed George Lutz extensively. Did you happen to hear that years ago?
Oh, I've listened to you for many years. I'm actually 31 now. I've called into the show before with a few things. I did not catch that interview.
Too bad.
But
it was a good one.
I love all the books and everything. I've done a lot of personalized research on that. It's very enthralling to me.
Okay, well, Doctor, before you answer this, I'm going to ask, can you both hold? We've got a break coming up. I can't avoid it. Got to do it. So.
Oh, yeah, that's fine.
All right. Everybody hold tight.
Dark Matter Network News. I'm Amy Martin. An unidentified flying object has been spotted over the skies of St. Helens in the UK. According to witnesses, the object, which was photographed by two different readers of the St. Helens Reporter, was floating over St. Helens Park and shape-shifting. One photograph shows the object during the day, which could be a hobby drone, yet another photograph shows an object over the city at night, depicting an eerie blue-green glowing orb. Both readers reached out to the paper through social media. The photograph taken at night was reportedly captured just before the lunar eclipse over the night of the 27th and 28th of September. What do you think? Check them out for yourself at sthelensreporter.co.uk. According to Business Insider, a group of divers went to dangerous lengths to remove a hook from the jaws of an injured shark last month. The group, which calls themselves Shark Addicts of Jupiter, Florida, were equipped with GoPro cameras when they noticed the shark in distress. A member of the group then distracted the dusky shark, holding it by the nose while another member removed the hook. You can see this video online at businessinsider.com. According to Art Bell listener Swordmaster Haruka, strange lights have been spotted over Mount Fuji in Japan. The listener writes, "Last week I mentioned strange lights or fire around the base of Mount Fuji. Last night they were big enough or close enough, hard to say, that I got some moderately okay pictures with my iPhone. In one picture they looked different because one light faded out and a new one started. What do these lights look like to you? Check these images out on artbell.com. A man has survived in the Australian outback after reports say that he was without water for over 6 days. The man, who claimed to be hunting feral camels in the Great Victoria Desert, was said to have lived on a diet of nothing but black tree ants. West Australian tactical responders found the man disoriented and delusional, though he is said to be recovering in stable condition. The blog GadgetZZ.com just received a mysterious DVD containing what appears to be a person in a 17th century plague doctor's mask and black robes. The figure looks to be communicating a strange encrypted message. The disc, which features a series of letters, numbers, and symbols written on the outside, contains the mysterious figure with an odd blinking light in the middle of its hand. The video also appears to have numerous deliberate glitches, and it is thought that the figure may be communicating to the recipient through some sort of encrypted Morse code. The DVD menu also features an image of human bones. The blog claims that the disc arrived from Poland and is reaching out to readers far and wide to help disseminate the code. Have a strange story or a news tip? Email amy@artbell.com. This has been Amy Martin for Dark Matter Network News.
Welcome back, everybody. Dr. Barry Taff is my guest, and we have been just ranging all over the place in this discussion, a very, very good discussion at that. Let's go right back to it. Doctor, welcome back, and caller, welcome back. Please continue.
Hello?
Yes.
That's basically my question with the entire Amityville thing. Why would it be that only the Lutzes experienced paranormal activity, but any owner after they vacated the premises,
mm-hmm,
have not reported anything? I mean, I know before the Lutzes, the entire DeFeo incident, which a lot of people are very sure is what caused the hell
the killings
that the Lutzes went through.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I've heard theories about paranormal activity like that, like it kind of being like a photograph looping in time type of thing, but it seemed like it interacted with the family, so that kind of negates that and gives it, you know, the entire thought that it was sentient that was interacting with the family. So do you have any idea why it would just single in on them and not on owners afterwards? Could it have been like provoked by something about them or what?
Well, you're not going to like my response, but in my opinion, based on the evidence collected by parapsychologists on the case, the reason why nothing happened after the Lutzes is because the case was a hoax.
Really?
Ooh.
That's what the evidence suggests. Dr. I'm already blanking on the name because I'm tired.
Now, wait a minute. Doctor, why wouldn't it be every bit as easy to say that the reason it left with the Lutz is because it was attached to them instead of the place? I mean, I you may have evidence I don't have. If you do, go ahead.
Right. A colleague of mine, and I'm blanking out on his name right now because I'm tired, there was some retroactive investigation done, and they couldn't really substantiate most of the claims made by the Lutzes. I was on a talk show with the Lutzes right after the book came out. I was at CBS television here in Los Angeles, and I said, I wasn't impressed with the book. I thought it wasn't well written. It was very sensationalized, and the types of phenomena described were very inconsistent with what I'd read about over the years and heard about. This is 43 years ago, I think it was. I wasn't impressed at all. And then, why am I blanking out? Passed away several years ago. And,
all right. Anyway, the bottom line, you don't have to remember, is you think that it was a hoax. Caller, I really appreciate the question.
No problem.
Thank you. I'm not sure that I agree on the hoax part of it, but you may know more than I do. Couldn't it easily be explained that it was whatever this entity was or whatever it was attached to the Lutzes?
Well, of course. I mean, obviously, like I said, the most phenomena linked to the people and occasionally to the environment and the people. But and then occasionally the environment, and depending on who's in it, it'll react or won't react. But again, based on the evidence that was collected by parapsychologists who I knew and had worked with, they couldn't validate or verify one of the facts described in the book, which leaves one that with the suspicion that the whole thing was hoaxed. Mm. And there was all this belief that before Jay Anson died, the author of the book, that he admitted that he and the Lutzes made it up. They were drinking and they were smoking a lot of weed, and they just made the whole thing up.
Really?
I can't prove or disprove that. That's some of the stories that have been scuttlebutt that's going around for a long time.
Okay. All right. First time caller line in Boise. You're on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, Art?
Yes.
Oh, hey. Awesome. I got through.
Yes.
Yeah, I've been a long time listener to you since I was about 22. I'm about 40 now.
Thank you for that.
I was just thinking on the whole hybrid takeover thing.
Yes.
That maybe it's not necessarily a bad thing, you know. Maybe there's how the elites run a lot of the world.
You sound like you're banging around there. Get good and close to your phone or whatever it is you're talking into.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Oh, I heard you right along.
Oh, okay. Maybe like the elites that supposedly run the world, maybe there's another more malevolent alien entity that actually runs them. And so this is just an idea I had. And so maybe these other aliens or entities are intermixing themselves with the humans to help fight back and maybe change the world into something better than it.
You're not the only one who's had that that view, caller. There are a number of people who've said, you know what, the way things are going, they might be doing us a favor. And, of course, you can't rule that out.
Yeah. Yeah, you never know. It's just a thought I had. I've never called before, so I just thought I'd give it a try and throw my idea.
Glad you did, and please call again, okay?
All right, thank you. It was awesome to talk to you, sir.
Take care. It's an idea that has to be considered, doctor, if they are interacting with us, if they are changing us. It has to be considered that it may not be a bad thing, although most of us would, I think, revolt at the concept of not being in control of ourselves. Maybe one day we'll all be singing Kumbaya and holding hands. Who knows?
Yeah.
A lot of calls here. El Paso, Texas. Let's try that. You're on the air.
Hello, Art. Hello, Doctor.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm glad I got through. I was on Skype that you couldn't hear me. And my question is...
Is your name Robert?
No, sir. My name is Felipe.
Felipe. Okay, Felipe. Yes. You better use the phone because that was one terrible Skype connection, brother.
Yes, I know. I apologize.
It's quite all right.
The question for the doctor, what is the scariest thing you have witnessed with your own eyes?
Uh-huh.
Two things come to mind. One was in 1992 in a case in the... I think it was the Hyde Park District. I remember it was the case of a nice Hispanic family, and we're standing in large...
Doctor?
Yeah.
We lost you for a second there.
You lost me?
For a second. Yeah, you're back now.
Oh, anyway, what happened is half the room began to violently shake while the other half the room was not moving. Not that we don't understand how that could happen. It can't happen because everything's connected with boards and bolts on the floors and the ceilings. So how can half a room shake?
It can't.
Right.
Nor can hamburgers unwrap themselves.
Right, right. One stranger, 1978, Television City, Fairfax and Beverly. My colleague and I are being interviewed to go on some talk show, and my colleague makes a joke that I don't show up in photographs, and I've had problems with cameras since I was very young. And I said to him, you made me look like an idiot in front of these people. They take a picture of both of us with an SX-70 Polaroid. It develops. Yeah, well, there was a problem, all right. My colleague showed up perfectly. He was a foot to my right. All you see where I was a mass of white light. No head, no face, no hair, nothing, just light. And they freaked out and told us to leave.
All right, caller, how's that? Half a room shaking, the other half not.
Sounds pretty scary.
Yeah, I would say so, too. If I was there, I'd be scared out of my wits. Going to Denver, Colorado on the first time caller line. You're on the air.
Hey, you guys, how's it going?
It's going well, sir.
Hey, I wanted to ask the doctor if he believes in past lives.
Oh, good question. Doctor? You know, I think we sort of lost him. I don't know where he went. He's still there. He's still connected. But it's like he's gone. So I don't know what to say. Caller, since I've got you, do you believe in past lives?
I think I do.
You think you do?
Yeah, because of something that, you know, happened to me when I was younger, but...
Go ahead, tell me.
Well, when I was about 27... All of a sudden, I got this madness about this girl I knew when I was in the fifth grade, you know. And it was so terrible.
What do you mean by madness? You mean like wanting to see her again or what?
Right. Right. Or I thought something was wrong. Terribly, terribly wrong, you know. And I woke up the next day and I ran into her, and almost went nuts. You're crazy, you know. And then what happened was a psychic told me, I didn't know who to go to. I thought I was getting ready to go to a mental hospital, and the psychic told me that we were in a past life together, and that's what this was, you know.
And that straightened you out.
Pardon?
That straightened you out. In other words, you right. said you were ready to go to a mental hospital.
Right. Yes, sir. That gave me an explanation, you know, as to what this, you know, this madness was, you know.
Right. And, an obsession, I guess you would call it. Is that a fair word, obsession?
I guess you could say that.
Uh-huh. I did. All right. Well, thank you very much. Very interesting. And... I would like to say something. And by the way, we've lost the doctor. I can't really dial him back up right now in the middle of a show or in the middle of the last minutes of a show. But I am very, very interested in the possibility of past lives. I have no idea whether it could be or is, but I have this feeling that there is something to it. And I've sort of looked into it more than you know, and it's something I would like to get some guests on. Let's go to Fallon, Nevada. You're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art. How you doing?
Fine. I lost my guest, unfortunately, but...
Yeah, well, my question was going to be for Dr. Taff is, I believe he was involved in the infamous entity case.
Oh, he explained it. Did you hear the beginning of the show?
I did, yes.
Okay, yeah. He explained the whole thing.
Yeah, and my question really was going to be if someone can actually produce, because I believe his synopsis was that she created it herself.
Yes.
Is there a way you can channel that to a more positive, if someone has that kind of ability or that kind of power, is there a way to channel that for a more positive
result?
Result, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, that was going to be my question. Have they thought about?
Well, it may not be. It may be, sir, that if somebody is producing so much energy, so much, in this case, negative energy, it's like asking them to suddenly be a happy person and make something jump up and down on the table, you know, to excite people instead of doing this negative stuff. And I don't see how that would work out.
Yeah, I was kind of basing it on there was some mental conditions going on as well. So, okay, that's what was going to be my question.
Okay, well, I'm sorry. That's the best answer I can offer. I don't think so. George on Skype, it's your turn. Hello. Hello. Going once. Going twice. And gone. Let's go to Little Rock, Arkansas. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello. Art? Yes.
Just wanted to make sure it was me.
It's you.
Okay, thank you. Well, I had a question for the doctor also, and I wanted to ask him, maybe you can if you get a chance. He said he had had a lot of out-of-body experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I had one. It was a long time ago. And how it started was, I was just sitting in my living room, and I just sort of kind of went into a trance stare at my curtains on the wall.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, I heard a voice saying, "I am that I am." And this happened a few times. And then I sort of had a reaction that I can either go with this or say no. And I said, "I'm gone. I'm going with it." And the next thing I knew, I was leaving my body. I looked back, saw myself on the couch. I had slumped over sideways like I was unconscious and fell over. And there was like, I want to say it was the Holy Spirit or an angel, something like that was...
Well, that's probably based on your religious background, I would guess, right?
Well, I am a believer, but...
There you have it.
I'm not... I don't go to church all the time, let's put it that way. But I am a believer in
Jesus.
Gotcha,
but I mean, I think it's reasonable for us to discuss the fact that if you're a religious person and something like this happens to you... You're probably going to assign it to something that fits your belief system. Is that fair?
I would say that's fair.
Okay.
And the next thing I knew, I was going through the air with this being, and I was on, like, I figured out, at the time I wasn't sure what was happening, but I was on a mountain, which I now think was like, where Moses received the Ten Commandments and he saw the finger of God writing them on the wall, on the stone.
Yes.
And I saw that. And there was two commandments. One was, "Thou shalt have no other gods before me." And the other was, "Honor thy father and thy mother."
So you didn't get to stick around for all 10?
No, I only got two.
Okay.
But...
Well, that's not just you. That's a lot more than out of body. I mean, that is time travel. That's all kinds of things. And I'm sorry we don't have time to go into this because the show is actually ending. And so I would like to say thank you to Dr. Taff who I didn't have an opportunity to say goodbye to because he just disappeared. So I'll call him back and we'll touch base. But he just, I don't know, he was gone. All the phone lines are full, plenty of people to talk to him, but the doctor just vanished. I don't have a frequent chance to do this. I want to thank my team. And all of, you know, this show doesn't just happen. It is a team effort. So Telos, Joe Talbot, my buddy here, thank you, Joe, for the wonderful audio. Keith Rowland, my webmaster. Heather Wade, my producer. Stream Guys, LV.net. Sales, Pete Eberhardt. TuneIn Radio distributes us to many, 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 many. And, of course, Amy Martin. She's our new news lady, and boy, what a job she does. My goodness. So, that's it, folks. Have a great night. We'll do it again tomorrow. I'll call the doctor and say, sorry, we got discombobulated there. Through all the time zones, good night.
Midnight in the desert.